Welcome in to a Saturday edition of the Daily Tap. It is January 27th. Hope you guys are having a good Saturday on an unseasonably warm day here in Milwaukee. Charlie here with you. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, StoneTapWI, as well as subscribe to us on iTunes and Google Play. Hopefully getting a couple more of those out to you sooner rather than later. So yeah, we have a good show today, a lot to talk about. We did also on the blog already talk about the Bucks. We're going to be recapping the Badger game as well in the time being. But right now, let's get into the podcast where we'll start with the Milwaukee Brewers again. They introduced Lorenzo Cain yesterday. They did not have a formal press conference with Christian Yelich, from what it seems like. Maybe that's being done today. But Cain put on the jersey, had a lot of fun, and it looks like they're ready to go. And now teams, you saw the media kind of react yesterday, local and nationally. You saw the Chicago media kind of really take this seriously. They're not thinking this Brewers team is just some pissant team anymore. They're thinking this is an actual contending baseball team, as well as the national media. John Morosi of MLB.com asked the question. I think he might be with Fox Sports, but regardless, he asked the question, are the Brewers World Series contenders now? And it's a very interesting question to hear. The Brewers and World Series is something. It's definitely, I don't know if we expected that to happen, but it's happening. And it might be a little strong of a take right now because, A, long way to go. There's still another month left before pitchers and catchers report, before free agency. I think you're going to start seeing a flurry of free agency signings. I think we have to, just take a step back. It does worry me, and I know this is going to happen, that the Brewers are the sexy team this year. They are going to be the sexy team, and that is always a worry. You never really want to be the sexy team heading into the season because everybody thinks you're going to be good, and therefore, if you're not, a lot of pressure, a lot of things go into it, and the expectations aren't there. What was interesting is Fangraphs, before the signing, had them only at about 73 wins. Basically, they didn't think that the Brewer pitching staff could be like they were last year. They thought a lot of these guys played over their heads and had them at 73 wins, which is pretty damn low. I think it got bumped up to around 84, so right around where they were last year. And I think some of that's accurate, some of it's not. I think sometimes the Fangraphs models don't always play into guys changing up their movement on their pitches. You know, Chase Anderson's a great example of this. They're projecting out what Chase Anderson's going to do this year compared to his entire career versus kind of the noticeable changes he made. And that goes for other guys as well. And, you know, that's not like a God-given thing. I don't know if over-unders are out yet. I'm sure there are baseball over-unders out right now. Let's see if we can find that. Baseball over-unders. Yes, and I don't know where the movement has made, but the Brewers are now down to plus 2,800 to win the World Series. That's moved from being 33-1 to now they're about 28-1. NL Central champion. The Brewers are starting out at about 12-1. That's decent value. So that's all I got right now. I don't think over unders are out yet. I think the betting, they're waiting until everything comes out, but that's a pretty solid number for the Brewers. I would probably bet that 12-1 is nice. That 28-1 is even better, and see where that line goes. But you know, it obviously is that people think this Brewers team is something, and I do think it's worth talking about them to be division contenders, to be wild card contenders. I think that is all fair and good, but the fact of the matter is it's a little early for a World Series contendership. We need to see what all happens in the next month. But right now, if you look at the Brewers, and the other thing too about World Series contending, I think sometimes that is cart before the horse, especially in baseball. Baseball is a long fucking season. There is a long way to go. And you can always make moves. I mean, in the second half of the year, if the Brewers are cooking, they can make a CC Sabathia-like deal and get more talent for less because teams are willing to offload guys who might be free agents next year. The Brewers can make some things happen if they have a successful ball team. So We'll see about that. Now, they did bring up something interesting about the depth and saying that the Brewers, you know, David Stern basically said, yeah, about all the outfielders were loaded, but I see it as we have depth. They've talked to Ryan Braun about potentially playing first base. There's some idea of a platoon with Eric Thames and Ryan Braun where Thames plays all against right-handers, Braun's out in left or center or right. He's probably going to play right field again because Yelich will be bumped to left as he was a gold glover there, and that's where I think he's going to play. And then Braun will move to first when they face lefties. And so that you ask yourself, what does that do with Jesus Aguilar? I mean, that's, again, a depth conversation. I mean, I don't think it's a lock that every against lefties every time Ryan Braun's going to play. I think it's going to be one of those things where Ryan Braun plays a decent amount. You know, they're going to manage his schedule. They're almost like an NBA player, you know, these days where they're managing his minutes. They're managing how much he's on the court, kind of a Greg Popovich technique to Ryan Braun. And I think that really could work out. Now, the question is how does Domingo Santana – I would love to know what's going through Domingo Santana's head right now. What's in his mind about how he sees himself? Have they told him, like, hey, we're going to deal him, and maybe the market kind of dried up a little bit because the Brewers are in desperation mode to deal Santana. That's some of the thought about why this Braun to first base stuff started to leak out, because they're like, okay, you don't want to trade us for what we want for Santana? Fuck you. We're just going to play him. We'll deal with it. We'll figure this out. And the Brewers are going to make it happen. I think they're going to make some moves. I do think the logical deal right now that has been proposed by fans and a few other media members is that Santana goes over to Cleveland for Danny Salazar, and that is a deal. I think there is a lot of those, like, deals you can make for teams who need outfielders and get about a third pitcher in a rotation sort of thing. I think Salazar would be a great add to this team, but once again, not going to put the cart before the horse and just sort of look at what the Brewers have right now. So if the Brewers were starting baseball today, and I think we all would want that. I think everyone's fired up for the season. Everyone's like, I think Mike Heller said yesterday on his radio program, like, I wish it was March 27th right now. I absolutely do exactly the same. So the lineup right now I have is Kane leading off, Yelich hitting second, Braun third, Shaw fourth, Thames fifth, VR 6th, Pena 7th, Arcia 8th, and then the pitcher spot. I think that's a good lineup. I got to look into how much Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain have led off in their career and see which one is going to be the leadoff hitter. I imagine Council's going to play around with the lineup a little bit. I don't think Cain and Yelich are going to be hitting lower than second. I could see maybe one of them hitting third and Ryan Braun hitting second. That could be a situation. That would be actually really interesting to have Braun hitting second, but I don't know exactly where that's going to go. I think Shaw's locked into that four spot. We'll see about Thames. Thames right now is the five hitter, but I don't project Thames to be hitting higher than fifth. Let's put it that way. And then you look at that pitching rotation. I think right now Chase Anderson is your opening day starter. I think he obviously deserves it. You can argue if there's an opening day curse. Maybe that's a podcast for another time. Then Zach Davies, Ulys Chacin, and then it's going to be a competition. I mean, Brandon Woodruff, Brett Suter, and Josh Hader are all going to be in the mix. I think if you've read a little bit about what's going on in winter ball down in the Caribbeans, Junior Guerra has been pitching lights out. So keep an eye on that. I mean, if Junior Guerra comes out and has a 2015 Junior Guerra like year, or 2016, excuse me, I think that's a huge addition to this team, because Junior Guerra was a 2 or 3 pitcher 2 years ago. Like, make no mistake about it, the guy just couldn't give up. He gave up so many home runs. So if he figured something out in winter ball, that is going to be a huge addition to this team. And but right now you look at that, you hear that starting rotation, you hear that lineup, and you're like, yeah, they can get a wild card. They could possibly win the division. But like I said, we have a month to go before the dust is settled. There's a lot that can happen. With the free agency market being the way it is, a lot can happen. I think the National League, now, but some people are like, the National League's not that good. I disagree and agree at the same time, if that makes sense. So the National League has some teams who are going to be contenders, and then some teams like your Miamis and Pittsburghs of the world who are pretty much donezo. But I think you have some contenders with Washington, St. Louis, even San Francisco's made some pushes with the McCutchen deal and things like that. You have the Mets have decent amount of talent. Dodgers, obviously. Colorado's not bad. Cubs, Atlanta, Arizona. I think you have teams that are good. I do think, though, when you're playing teams like the Reds, the Pirates, the Marlins, even maybe the Padres, I don't want to count the Phillies. Don't be surprised if the Phillies make a little push this year. Shout out to Pat Luce. And we'll see what happens. And I think that this is not like, yeah, there's going to be some series where it's like, okay, the Brewers should win 2 out of 3 or they should sweep. And if they don't, well, it's a fucking problem. But at the same time, it's a little overblown that the National League is bad. I think it's top heavy, and I think the Brewers are part of that top heavy conversation. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if anything notable comes from On Deck on Sunday, as that's taking place tomorrow. So check that out if you're around the Milwaukee area. Moving forward to the Bucks, we did recap that on SnowtapWI. It's a website, but look at, they played awesome last night. Great to see the Milwaukee Bucks come out and just look loose as hell, look like the team who was free. You know, player tapping the keg this week, and he had the freedom. That basically was the Bucks last night. I think Giannis showed it with his three-point shot, just seemed loose as all hell. Chris Middleton flashing smiles. Malcolm Brogdon, you know, looked happy all week. He missed the game yesterday with a calf injury. The Bucks seem to be on a good path right now, and it really appears that Joe Prunty has loosened these guys up and are giving them confidence to shoot the basketball as well as just play. And that's something that I don't know if Jason Kidd exactly did. So this is a good start in the right direction. You don't want to get too excited because it is Brooklyn, and the Bucks look fresh and laid down the hammer now. They play 3 games in 4 nights. They play tomorrow in Chicago, which more on that later in the podcast. And then they play Philadelphia at home. You'd almost, and now this would suck as someone who's attending the game tomorrow, but you'd almost like them to lose tomorrow and beat Philadelphia on Monday to have that tiebreaker. If you were to ask me, I'd obviously like them to win all three and get on a kind of a winning streak here. But if they were to lose one, it would be Chicago and then beat Philadelphia, as you're battling the Sixers for playoff position right now. Sixers laid the smackdown on San Antonio last night, and you know they have the tiebreaker right now with one win. So it's imperative that the Bucks do get a win against Philadelphia on Monday night. I wouldn't say it's a must win, but I say it's a very important game for Milwaukee going forward. And if they are going to get, and I said this in one of the blogs today about Giannis, if Giannis is going to get into that MVP discussion, they're going to have to get close to 50 games, which means they're going to have to go 25-10 to finish the year. They have 25 wins right now. And it's not impossible. 15 games over 500 is quite a tall task. But if they do, Giannis is going to get mentioned, because if he gets hot and he plays even better, look out. I mean, if this Giannis 3 thing is a legitimate thing, we don't know yet if it's a thing. He did look, there was no hitch in his giddy up, shall we say. He just was shooting the basketball. He was just having fun out there. If we see that again in Chicago, we see that again in Philadelphia, then we have to really take notice, and then we really should start getting excited, because holy shit, guys, this could be awesome little run here for the next couple months. So we'll look forward to seeing what the Bucks do. Worth at least getting pumped up. Well, cool to see that. Hopefully on Sunday they'll have the entire gang there with Giannis playing, with Brogdon playing, and they'll be at full strength. I wouldn't be surprised if someone rests, though, just considering that they do play 3 games in 4 nights. But who knows? I would imagine either it's a full team or maybe someone does get a night off. But we'll see. I did want to mention before we talk a little bit about Michigan State, what's going on there. Boogie being done for the year bums me out big time. I've been a Boogie guy. I've kind of planted my flag in being a Boogie guy. And him tearing his ACL, his Achilles, as he's getting ready to get into the free agency market, be a major player, is just so depressing. And as well for the Pelicans and their fan base, as they're sort of trying to build a Bucks-like thing down there. And they're 27-21. They're cooking with gas. I think they were a half game out of the 5th seed in the playoffs. 1-6 straight, beat the Rockets last night. And to lose Boogie is just terrible. And you'll wonder if they'll be active in the market and try to get, you know, some additional pieces. They definitely need some bench help. Drew Holiday's been great for the team. I think he's really added something. I'll be interested to see also, too, what Rondo does now with Boogie off the court. I think you're going to get a little more Rondo. I know Rondo's been really well with Anthony Davis off the court. We really haven't seen all the usage numbers. Obviously, Davis gets a bump in usage big time with that. And here, let me also put this out there. Speaking of MVP races, if the Pelicans sustain and they're like the 5 seed or the 4 seed, I think Anthony Davis is front and center in that in that MVP conversation, especially if he stays healthy. I think the worry now for Pelicans fans is you always expect Anthony Davis to get hurt, as he's someone who has been injury prone through his career. And now the guy who's been sort of durable, who's missed games but not many, gets hurt, and now it's like, fuck. So we'll see what happens. I still like the Pelicans. I still think they're worth league pass watching, but it's a bummer that Boogie's going to be out. We'll see who gets also picked for the All-Star game and how that works. I don't know if they're doing it as an alternate, just last guy in, or if it's, you know, they're taking somebody from the Western Conference. This All-Star thing, it's another topic probably once the All-Star game happens, but they still need to fix some of those things. My guess would be that Paul George is coming along and he will be the representative. I'd be surprised if it isn't Paul George, but he definitely, I think, would be the next up for that category. All right, finishing up on a little more serious note with Michigan State, I did want to talk about, let's talk a little Michigan State to finish up. You know, the Outside the Lines report came out yesterday basically saying that Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo did nothing around sexual assault with both their teams, and it makes it seem like there is a Baylor-like situation going on at Michigan State. It started with Larry Nassar, with all the terrible things he did and the scumbag bullshit that he's about, and then it went further. It went beyond just the gymnastics team, just the women that were assaulted by him, not only gymnastics but female athletes. It went beyond that to basically Michigan State would play fast and loose and cover up sexual assaults domestic assaults in their football and basketball program. And, you know, D'Antonio and Izzo have got in front of it, basically saying, hey, look, I'm not going to back down, and everything like that. Izzo conveniently didn't mention survivors that much in his press conference after they beat the Badgers last night. And you really have to wonder what's next for Michigan State. I don't know how both guys can survive this. I think this is something that is going to permeate and be a part of the story around sports for the next few months, and maybe years. I think the fact of the matter is Michigan State is a known program. It is a program that has been, you know, one of the things, they've been a major institution, especially in college basketball, but also in college football. I mean, they made the college football playoff a couple years ago. They've definitely had a rise to power. I did think it was a little shitty, and I understand the whole situation going on, but a little shitty of Mike Heller to basically say, like, well, you know, they'd always wonder how these kids got into Michigan State and not into Wisconsin. I think that was kind of a bullshit dig that really wasn't necessary, because the fact of the matter is, yeah, maybe the standards were different there, but it's clear that, yeah, they maybe took some chances on some players and things like that, and that wouldn't be there. It's just the pious Wisconsin bullshit that I can't fucking do, and we don't need to talk. We were talking about Michigan State, so let's just stay there. That rubbed me the wrong way. Not something that was needed in that situation. So with Michigan State, I think both Izzo and Antonio are going to be out. I don't think this is something that they can survive. Let's remember, Super Bowl's over. There's going to be all the attention's going to go somewhere, and I think this Michigan State story is going to stay. I don't think this is going to be something that goes away. Kind of like the Baylor situation. The Baylor thing was just a ball rolling downhill. It just kind of got started and started and started. Now, the report came out that Mark Emmert also is involved. The NCAA chairman knew about 37 different situations. Nicole Auerbach reported that about sexual assault, and he just ignored it. Emmert's probably out. You have to think that this is going to be pretty messy. And, you know, a guy like Izzo, he has, what, maybe 2 months left of the season, maybe 2.5. The guy can bolt to the NBA. I think that's going to happen. And I will plant my flag in that to say he's not going to retire. He's just going to go coach in the NBA. Mikal Bridges is done. He's going to be a top pick in the draft. He's his best player. He could maybe go coach Cleveland in a rebuilding Cavs team. If you assume LeBron leaves, him and Dan Gilbert are buddies. There's the Pistons angle. If they get rid of Stan Van Gundy, you know, and I don't want him to be at the Bucks. I think the Bucks don't need the drama, but he loved Jabari Parker. He was a huge Jabari Parker guy. You would probably think that Izzo would try to pine for that job as well. I think the guy is done. I think he's not going to be a college coach after this year. I think he can survive and weather the storm. He's great. It'll be interesting to see how the media portrays Tom Izzo, because Tom Izzo is probably one of those good guy media people. It's like Bill Self. Bill Self never get like the whole Billy Preston scandal where Billy Preston got into a car crash and all of a sudden he just goes plays in Bosnia and nobody says a peep about it. And Kansas has been implicated in the Adidas scandal, and yet no one is like talking about Kansas because Bill Self is part of that media mafia, and I feel like Izzo is as well. So it'll be interesting to see how the media reacts. D'Antonio is a different story. D'Antonio has eight months to go before we're talking football again. I don't know if he can be the coach at the start of this year. I don't know if that's going to be something that he's going to do, you know, and maybe it's a thing where he's out. It depends on how much he knew. It really goes down. It's just like Art Briles, man. Art Briles, it was like originally Art Briles wasn't going to step down. He didn't know anything of this was going on. And then it leaked out that Briles basically was the ringleader. He was the mob boss of this whole thing. And that's what got Briles fired, and that's what's got him pretty much ostracized from college football, and for good fucking reason, because he's a bad dude. And I'm not ready to say Mark D'Antonio is a bad dude. I think there is enough there, there's enough smoke, and when there's smoke, there's fire, that he didn't do enough to protect the student athlete, the female students here at Michigan State. And it's like, how do you really cheer for a team? Like, I don't know how I'd really feel about my team at this point. I don't know how I would cheer for Michigan State last night. I know that the Iz Zone had, I mean, it's named after the fucking coach. I mean, these coaches think that they just run the university, which they do in a sense, especially at a place like Michigan State, where they've provided, you know, so much success and so much attention to the school and made it not like a little brother to put them on par with Michigan. And so it's very interesting to see what's going to happen here. Outside the Lines did a great job. All the local papers on the Nassar story did a fantastic job and deserve a ton of credit. And this is definitely something to keep an eye on as we get into the lean month of February, where we don't talk about much because there's not a ton going on. Even with the Winter Olympics, there won't be a ton going on after the Super Bowl. So definitely something to keep an eye on and see what comes out, because I think this is only the start and we'll just see where it goes from there. Okay, wrapping up, programming note, no real blogs or podcasts on Sunday. I'm going to be taking the Snow Tap crew to Chicago. It's not my treat. I'll be going with my boy Mitch and then Eric, our Bucks Twitter representative, as well as our friend, my roommate Mike. And so we're going to have a good time. We'll talk about the Chicago trip on Daily Tap on Monday, as well as, you know, chat about what happened with the Bucks game and wrap up the weekend and start talking about the Super Bowl. We'll probably take one headline per day about the Super Bowl. That's something I used to do on the blog. We'll just kind of do it in the podcast form and just take a headline per day and sort of map it out and talk Super Bowl all week, get you ready for that. So thanks for listening. Once again, subscribe, iTunes, Google Play, as well as we can be found Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Look forward to talking to you guys again on Monday. Take care. Have a good rest of your weekend, Tappers. See you.